I knew how to put you.
What is up? It's Pro Football Focus Fantasy Podcast. My name is Jeff Rackliff, and it's Friday, March 22nd. March Madness in full swing right now. I tell you what, I'm football 24-7, 365, 366 in a leap year. But I like me some March Madness. I'm in a fantasy March Madness league where you draft five guys, and it's points only, no rebounds, no assists, none of that. And it's honestly revived my interest in the NCAA tournament. I kind of lost interest over the years. Over the last 5 or 6 years of doing this, though, I'm back in. But I'm also fully in on NFL football, and there's a lot to talk about on the pod today. Before I get into it all, though, of course, go check out profootballfocus.com. So many goodies, so many goodies at your disposal there. One of my favorite things right now that we have up on the site is the NFL Draft Guide. It's not for fantasy specifically, but if you're a dynasty player, or you know, even if you're just a redraft best ball type player, then it's such a great resource for you. So you know, you get access to all of the stats, all the data, the information on these incoming rookies that you can't get anywhere else. So I highly recommend going and checking that out. You can go check out my Dynasty Rankings update as well. That we posted my top 100 with some blurbs about a good chunk of the players. That's free, so you don't have to be a subscriber to check that out. If you want to see all of the Dynasty Rankings, of course, you do have to at least be an Edge subscriber. But it's $40. $40 for the year. And a lot that comes along with it. And of course, if you want a discount on that, you can get a discount with the promo code BESTBALL. So a lot of options for you there. Speaking of BESTBALL, I will talk a little bit about BESTBALL on the show today. I want to just sort of break down some general thoughts on roster construction, you know, basically why you should be playing BESTBALL, and then, you know, some roster construction thoughts. Where am I drafting guys at various positions, etc. So how I go about all of that. We have to talk a little bit about the NFL. Get excited, everybody. The NFL owners meetings. Actually, there is potential reason for excitement here on a couple of the proposed rule changes. So we're going to talk about that on the show today and a couple news and notes items as well. Tie a bow, basically, on free agency for all intents and purposes, because really the two remaining players of any interest for me are now officially signed. So well, let's dive into that right now. In fact, one of those two players is Jared Cook, and we saw Jared Cook land with the New Orleans Saints, which is obviously it's an enticing landing spot. There's no doubt about it, but I think we have to exercise a little bit of caution here because, of course, Cook coming off of that monster season that he put up last year, 896 yards, 68 catches. He went up over 100 targets for the first time in his career, 6 touchdowns on the season. He was the number 5 fantasy tight end. And I know when we hear players landing with certain teams, there's that sort of knee-jerk reaction like, this is amazing. New Orleans, a tight end to New Orleans, we've had that reaction over the years, right? Kobe Fleener, remember that? Yeah, I fell prey to that one too. Even Ben Watson a little bit as well. But this is not the same New Orleans team that caused us to have those reactions. We had those reactions because of Jimmy Graham. I mean, let's be honest here. Jimmy Graham was a beast for fantasy purposes for a huge stretch of time. It was him and Gronk. They were the two elite options, and we still have memories of that, right? It's not that long ago. It's not that far in the rearview mirror that Jimmy Graham was on this roster. However, the team today, entering the 2019 season, is a very different team than when Jimmy Graham was with the New Orleans Saints. I mean, think about it. Drew Brees, for the longest time, it was like, write it in permanent Sharpie ink that this guy's going to throw for, you know, 600-plus passing attempts. Just write it down. Permanent ink, right? Not anymore. Last year, New Orleans as a team attempted 519 passes that ranked 23rd in the league. You know, Brees obviously wasn't all of them. You know, you had the random Taysom Hill passes, and then, of course, Brees didn't play in the last week of the season. But regardless, it's not as pass-heavy of a team as it once was. And I think you have to look at it from the standpoint of, you know, what sort of target share are we looking for Jared Cook as well? Because we know, first and foremost, Michael Thomas is going to get his. Michael Thomas is going to be hovering probably in the 30% range just like he was last year. Alvin Kamara is going to get his. He was in the 20% range. So, you know, between two guys, there's 50% of the targets off the table right away. But from there, they really don't have anybody else who's going to suck up a ton of targets. Like Ted Ginn, when he was healthy last season, saw about a 15% share. He was the only other player up over 10% when healthy last year. So there's the opportunity for Cook to step in and see 15, 16% of the targets. He's not going to see the 19% that he saw in Oakland last season. He's not going to get that many, but 15, 16% is still a solid number for tight ends. However, if we look at last year's production, last year's passing attempts for the Saints, I mean, that might only be about 80, 85 targets for Cook. You know, the rough projection I have for him is 83 targets, which would translate, based on his career rate stats, it would be about 52 catches, 671 yards, 4.5 touchdowns. That's 146 PPR points, which is a big drop off from 193.6 that he scored last season. But it still would be a top 10 worthy total if he goes out and puts up 146 PPR points. So while we can't just say, oh, you know, this is a huge upgrade for him, no, it's not a huge upgrade. But it's not a downgrade either. I mean, he's going to play in an exciting offense, in an explosive offense with Drew Brees, a future Hall of Fame quarterback, throwing him the ball. And Drew Brees still throwing the ball very well, mind you. So he is still a top 10 option. In fact, that's where I'm slotting him after this move. He'll come in right at number 10, which is solid. I mean, you know, tight end's brutal. Yes, we have the saying, tight end is certainly brutal. But this shows us that maybe there could be a little bit of depth. I know we think that every year at this time of year, that there's somehow going to be depth at tight end. But maybe this gives us just a little bit of depth, just a tiny little bit. So Jared Cook, not a bad landing spot. And then, of course, the other name on the list that I checked off is Randy Cobb going to the Dallas Cowboys. That was an expected move as well. He steps into the shoes vacated by Cole Beasley. But when you look at this overall, there's a couple things in the negative column. I don't mind the landing spot. I think there were worse places to go. He did land on a depth chart where he can essentially be one of the top three receivers on the team. But it's a run-heavy offense. It's an offense that certainly is going to run through Ezekiel Elliott and Amari Cooper. Let's not forget Jason Witten is back in the mix. And I know he was in the booth for a year, and he's up there in age, but if he's on the field, they're going to target him. You also have an ascending young player in Michael Gallup. So how many targets are actually available for Randall Cobb? Not to mention the fact the contract, it's a $5 million one-year deal. It's not a hefty contract. It would indicate that the way the team views him is not that he's going to be a long-time contributor. This is essentially one-year prove-it type deal. And hey, we saw this already with a receiver leaving Green Bay and going elsewhere. And then really, essentially, I mean, okay, sure, you used Jordy Nelson in DFS at the end of the season. But if you drafted Jordy Nelson in season-long leagues, how good did you feel about that, you know, by the end of the year? Probably not good at all, you know. And I think, you know, we could see this with Randall Cobb. It's not that he's super old. He's going to be 29 this season. But this could be him coming to the end of the line. We really haven't seen much out of him in the last several seasons. So, I don't mind the landing spot because of the opportunity, but you can't really view him as much more than a wide receiver five. You know, could we get those occasional Cole Beasley weeks out of him? You know, the Cole Beasley two touchdown weeks that he seemingly had like one of those in him every season? Yeah, sure, but good luck figuring out which week that is. That essentially ties the bow on NFL free agency for our purposes here. There's still going to be signings, obviously, and some of them, you know, may potentially have some fantasy impact, but the big names are out of the way with NFL free agency. So that was fun. Now we're officially in NFL draft season. So by the way, coming up on the pod through the end of March into April, especially, we're going to really start breaking down all of the NFL draft prospects for fantasy purposes. And I'm excited. The NFL draft, just over a month away. Just over a month away. That is definitely very, very exciting. Very, very exciting. So, 2 days away is the NFL owners' meetings. It'll basically be the earlier part of this upcoming week. And of course, at this event, this is where the initial sort of talks for any proposed rule changes will play out. Every year, there are lots of proposals for rule changes. And every so often, some of them do get through. I mean, of course, recent memory here, probably the one that has had maybe the biggest impact on the NFL is the extra point, moving the extra point back. But we've seen, you know, the rules with the kickoff, with players getting a running start, that has impacted things. So I read through the rules and all the proposals, and a few of them did stick out to me. So I wanted to go through these really quickly here. First and foremost, competition committee proposing an amendment to Rule 15, Section 2. So if you don't know what that is, basically it's reviewable plays. And it is a proposal to expand reviewable plays to include fouls for pass interference. Gee, I wonder why, right? So there's a lot of them that actually have to deal with instant replay and expanding that. There are certain teams who are against it. There are certain teams who are for it. But, you know, this is something that's obviously going to be talked about. Another one that stood out to me, though, Kansas City proposed this one. Their proposal is to allow both teams the opportunity to possess the ball at least one time in overtime. I wonder why. Even if the first team who possesses the ball scores a touchdown, I think this only makes too much sense. You know, it seems silly that you lose a game based on a coin flip. And you know, this makes perfect sense. Even if that first team scores a touchdown, you should have the opportunity to also try and score a touchdown. So hopefully something like that gets passed. There's a couple other parts to this proposal, but one of them is to eliminate overtime in preseason. I guess that makes sense too, but whatever, that really doesn't impact us much. But for fantasy purposes, I mean, potentially more scoring would be a result there, tiniest marginal little bit. But anyway, I think it would make the games more entertaining as well. And then here's another one as well that I thought was interesting. This is proposed by Denver. The proposal is to provide an alternative to the onside kick that would allow a team who is trailing in a game the opportunity to maintain possession of the ball after scoring. Doesn't suggest what that alternative is, but the aforementioned changes to the kickoff, well, we've basically rendered onside kicks useless at this point. They're almost impossible to execute. And this is something we do see in the AAF. The AAF has an alternate way of going about this, which makes a lot of sense. And again, it's something that'll make the game more entertaining. If there's something that is more achievable for that team who has just scored to maintain possession of the ball, then yeah, I mean, this only makes too much sense. Maybe we see a little bit of the influence of the AAF on the NFL in that one. So if any of these rule changes do go down, or, you know, sometimes they'll go down, you know, sort of in a sort of interim type proposed basis, then of course we'll talk about those and the impact that they potentially could have. But to wrap things up today, just wanted to talk, like I said, a little bit about best ball. I've given this spiel 100 times before, but I'm going to say it again. Best ball is an important part of the fantasy process. If you're serious about playing fantasy football, then you need to be playing best ball. And I have no skin in the game. It's not like I run a best ball company or anything like that. I'm not making any money off of you playing best ball. What I'm suggesting here is playing best ball is going to make you a better drafter. And okay, yeah, you can't win your league on draft day, blah, blah, blah. But you can certainly put yourself in a much better position on draft day if you dominate in your draft. And the challenge with drafting, especially when you're in a live setting, you know, and I think that really is the only way to do so. I do not like season-long drafts that are held online, because those drafts give an advantage to people who don't prepare. You could literally go out and do no preparation whatsoever and draft on ESPN and draft a half-decent team, just basically going and picking who's at the top of the darn list when you're up, right? It gives you that advantage. When you're drafting in person, sure, you can have rankings with you. You could do no preparation. And I think you'll draft the first couple rounds, you'll draft a decent team. But after that, your team is going to stank, like terrible, stank, awful, brutal. It's a different dynamic. You have to do more preparation. You also have to have reps under your belt. Because we all get into those situations when we're in a live draft, you're in, you know, somebody's backyard, you're putting stickers on boards, you're you know, hanging out with everybody, maybe the adult beverages are flowing as well, and you know, you're in the middle rounds, your pick comes up, a guy who you've been eyeing up goes right before you, right? And that's a terrible situation to be in because the nerves may get going a little bit. You might make a hasty decision. You might pick a player and then realize that you should have picked somebody else, right? Well, a lot of that comes down to experience. A lot of that comes down to being put in these situations where you have to make these decisions and you know, having the know-how to do so, the experience under your belt to do so, the muscle memory, so to speak, to do so. It's hard to get that experience in live drafts. You can only do so many a year. Even if you're in a couple home leagues, you're in 2, 3, 4 home leagues, you're doing 2, 3, 4 live drafts a year. So, you know, 3 home leagues takes you 10 years to do 30 drafts. You can do 30 best ball drafts in the span of an offseason. You can have all of those reps under your belt. And for me, I've noticed this, you know, big time. When I first got into the industry, I started doing more and more and more drafts. And best ball has been around for years, even though it's only kind of now that it seems like people have become aware of it, it's been around for a very long time. And so doing all those drafts, this is like way back in like 2010 when I started in the industry, I did a ton of these best ball drafts in the offseason. When I had my home league drafts, I was more confident in those home league drafts than I'd ever been before in all of my years of playing fantasy football. And now that just has continued to build. Now, of course, I do this for a living, but in the same right, I mean, you don't have to work in the fantasy industry to do a bunch of best ball drafts. The beauty to best ball right now is you can do best ball drafts for a dollar. You do 30 best ball drafts, $30. You got a little action on the line. You know, if you win 3 of those 30, you get your money back, right? It's not a bad thing whatsoever. But of course, there is some challenges with best ball because you can't just simply apply the same strategy that you do in your regular season long leagues. And I think, you know, first and foremost, the number one tip that I have for best ball drafts is ceiling over floor, right? You want to lean towards ceiling because ceiling's what ultimately produces the biggest bang for your buck. This is where the Deshaun Jacksons of the world are much more valuable. And I guess when you're thinking ceiling over floor, you can think about that with every single one of your picks, though I will say that generally speaking, the first 5, 6, 7 rounds of a best ball draft isn't going to have that much difference from your typical redraft. It's after you get to that point that you really have to start prioritizing ceiling over floor. So number 2 tip for you here would be make sure you're drafting off of rankings and not off of site ADP. And that's a big one. Now, I know that some people are more comfortable with constructing your own rankings than others, but you don't have to. You don't have to do your own rankings. You can certainly use my rankings. You could use the consensus PFF rankings. You could use whoever rankings you want. Now, granted, you're not going to be able to find a lot of sites with best ball rankings right now. PFF is one of them. But what I like to do is I have my rankings in place. And then before I start a draft, I just want to be aware of what the current ADP is on that particular site. So if you're using Draft or if you're using FanBall, what's the current ADP? And after that point, you know, I want to kind of compare and contrast the ADP to my rankings. You can do that in a simple spreadsheet. Very, very easy thing to do. Or you could do it by hand. I mean, it's going to take you longer. But just to see where the gaps are. You know, see where, like, if you're a lot higher on a guy than ADP, well, you don't want to draft him where you rank him because it's very unlikely he's going to go. Like, say you have a 6th round value on somebody based on your rankings, but his ADP's in the 9th round. I mean, you kind of split the difference. You're going to be looking at him in the mid-7th if you're one of the middle picks in that round. You have to compare and contrast to find where those value gaps are going to be. So drafting off rankings is crucial. You can't just roll in and try and wing it and base it off of ADP because your team isn't going to be as strong as it should be. So rankings, not ADP. The third tip that I have for you here is really pay attention. It's something we have to do in any fantasy draft, but really pay attention to what people are doing in the draft. What are your opponents doing? And I mean, hey, this can be a simple like zig when zag type thing, you know, the sort of classic, well, everybody's drafting running backs and there's value at wide receiver, then go after wide receiver, that sort of thing. You know, of course, everything in moderation. You know, you can't go just completely zero RB because that tends to not be successful in this era. But you might be able to get yourself some value at wide receiver if you're paying close attention. Likewise, though, you can pay attention to teams who are deploying certain strategies because you'll start to see their hands will start to be shown once you get into the middle rounds. Are they going a zero RB approach? Are they going a late round quarterback approach? Or, you know, whatever it might be, paying attention to what they're doing and then using that. I can't tell you how often I see people who draft their teams and they focus only on what they're doing, not what their opponents are doing. If you only focus on what you're doing, you're probably not going to draft as good of a team as if you're looking at the whole picture. So and it's really easy with best balls to just put my pick in. That's it. I would recommend before you make your picks each round, just take a quick glance at what has happened before and just keep like a running tally of what your opponents are doing in the draft. Number four, if you're doing a lot of drafts, be careful with exposure. And exposure, you probably, you know, if you play DFS, you play best ball, you're aware of this concept, but it's pretty simple. It's how many rosters do you have a particular guy on? I don't like to, now if I'm only doing a few, then I'm not going to worry about exposure because honestly, at that point, it's going to be really hard to control exposure. But if you're doing 30, 40, I know there are people out there who will do like 100 or more best ball drafts over the course of the offseason. I mean, you have to be very careful. Like you can't have more than 30, 35% of your rosters with a particular player. So this is one of those where you do need to be conscious of that. And this is where you probably do have to be keeping a spreadsheet of each of your rosters and figuring out what percentage each guy is on your roster. Because, hey, if a guy gets hurt, like if you have 70% Le'Veon Bell shares and Le'Veon Bell gets hurt, 70% of your rosters just lost a player there, you know, and you're putting yourself behind the eight ball. Plus, it is kind of fun from that vantage point, too, because we get put in these positions where it's a this player or that player. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I have those more often than I would think that I would. You know, if it's Le'Veon Bell or James Conner, you may be put to that decision a bunch of times in these drafts. And honestly, if you are, then you go 50-50. If, you know, 50% of the time you go Bell, 50% of the time you go the other direction. And what this will also allow you to do is it will allow you to explore different paths in your draft. You can go different directions, see how your team works out if you go down one path or the other. You know, you probably have noticed this in mock drafts as well that, you know, your team's going to turn out differently. The beauty, though, to best ball is unlike a mock draft, people have something on the line. So they're going to draft for real. They're not going to just bail after the first couple rounds, whatever it may be. So the number five tip, final tip here that I have for you is always be aware of roster construction as well. With a common best ball format, I typically am looking at 2 to 3 quarterbacks. Now, if I'm going to draft 2 quarterbacks, like this year, for example, if Patrick Mahomes was in there in the 3rd round, he's still on the board. He's not going to be. But if he was on the board in the 3rd round and I take Patrick Mahomes, I took one very early. I'll probably take one quarterback way late, and I'm just going to leave it at that. But most often, I'm taking 3 quarterbacks where I'm looking at 2 or 3 in the middle rounds. If I go 2 in the middle rounds and I go 1 in the late rounds, right? Typically, that's the most common approach for me. So 2 to 3 quarterbacks, I'll go 4 to 6 running backs, 6 to 9 wide receivers. And really, that's one of those that exposure will come into play, value will come into play. You know, sometimes I might be a little bit more running back heavy. Other times I might be a little bit more wide receiver heavy, but I want to at least hit the minimums for each. So minimum of 4 running backs, minimum of 6 wide receivers. And then it's 2 to 4 tight ends, not necessarily 2 to 3, though most of the time it is 2 to 3. And it's a very similar thing with quarterbacks. If I drafted Kelce, if I drafted Ertz, if I drafted Kittle, then I'm not going to look at tight end until way later in the draft. If I am in more of the Hunter Henry range, then I'm probably going to, you know, maybe follow that up with another tight end and just stick with two. If I miss on, you know, anyone out of the, like that top six, then I'm probably going to draft three and they're going to be late and I'm going to be swinging for the fences. You know, sometimes I might grab like a Hunter Henry and then do the same thing, wait, and then draft two in the later rounds, you know, swinging for the fences. You know, if I can get a Chris Herndon later, somebody like him, and then, you know, whoever it might be, tight end is just so terrible. But typically it's 2 to 3. Sometimes it might be 4. And then I'm going to go 2 to 3 team defenses. I don't prioritize defense. I do wait. I'm not going to draft Chicago or Jacksonville or, you know, defenses that are premium. I don't see much value in that. Defense is so volatile. Defense is so problematic that I just, you know, I'm going to skip out on drafting those early ones. So there you go. 2 to 3 quarterbacks, 4 to 6 running backs, 6 to 9 wide receivers, 2 to 3 tight ends, maybe 4, and then 2 to 3 team defenses. So there, 5 tips that should get you started. If you haven't started already, highly recommend doing so. And I think another topic we'll get to in one of the upcoming podcasts is the sweet spots for where you can be drafting the various positions, because I've noticed there are some sweet spots for the different positions. They're actually at different points in the draft as well. But that's going to come up on a future episode of the pod. So that is going to do it for us today. Remember, go check out jeffratcliffe.com to get your hands on one of those Rat Pack t-shirts that are freaking awesome. They're awesome. So go check that out. And of course, on Twitter, at Jeff Ratcliffe, hashtag Rat Pack. That way I know you're a listener of the pod. And go check out ProFootballFocus.com as well. Enjoy your weekend. I'll catch you on the flip side. For Pro Football Focus, I'm Jeff Ratcliffe, and I'm out of here.